Hey, everyone. This is Chip Zion, the voice of Howard in the film Howard the Duck. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Comic Book Central, huh? Not bad for a duck from outer space.
Hello, comic book fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Big week for Comic Book Central. Got some really exciting news I want to tell everyone about. As if last week's news about the show being handpicked by iTunes as one of their essential podcasts wasn't enough, this week, Comic Book Central was mentioned on the official Star Wars website at starwars.com. Yep, you might recall a couple of my recent episodes featured my trip to the Cincinnati Comic Expo, where I interviewed Empire Strikes Back, Superman 2, and Flash Gordon actor John Morton. That was on episode 45 of the show. Well, John wrote a terrific article about the Comic Expo for the Star Wars website, and he mentioned myself and Comic Book Central in the article. It's a really cool look at his time in Cincy for the Boba Fett reunion. I'm going to put the link to the article in the show notes. Big thanks to John for the mention. And some more good news. Regular listener Rick Myers posted his list of best things from 2014 on his blog, The Recovering Uber Geek. You can find the blog at rdmyers, that's R-D-M-Y-E-R-S, 97115.blogspot.com. Well, you guessed it. Rick included Comic Book Central on his list of best things. Mentioned in the same context of Guardians of the Galaxy. I am truly honored, Rick. Thanks so much for including the show on your list. I hope you continue to enjoy the show in 2015. I've got some amazing guests making reservations in the lair, so be sure to stay tuned. I'm going to put the link to Rick's blog in the show notes as well. Now on to today's show. I've got part two of my beak-to-beak episode spotlighting Marvel Comics' first feature film, the quacktastic, silly, goofy, special effects, rock and roll stunt show that is Howard the Duck. Now, not surprising if you missed this one back in 1986, it didn't do as well at the box office as producer George Lucas would have liked, but it wasn't for a lack of trying. I said it before on the show, the money is definitely on the screen. Tons of stunts and special effects. You've got a soundtrack, not only by James Bond composer John Barry, but it also includes 80s synth-pop icon Thomas Dolby. That's right, she blinded me with science. She blinded me with Howard the Duck. Some wild and funny performances by the amazing Leah Thompson, who, by the way, still looked amazing on Dancing with the Stars, wearing her Howard the Duck crew jacket, no less. Check out YouTube for that video. There's a manic Tim Robbins and a chilling villain in Jeffrey Jones. And of course, my guests for these episodes of Comic Book Central, Ed Gale and Chip Zion. If you missed last week's episode, be sure to go back and take a listen. Very entertaining conversation with Ed, who was inside the Howard suit. This week, I'm sitting down with a man who came in after Ed did his thing and provided the sarcastic quack for our favorite fowl, the voice of Howard the Duck, Chip Zion. Chip was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and his journey from Brewtown to Tinseltown is an interesting one, as you will soon hear. Chip made a name for himself in the world of acting by appearing on stage in numerous productions, and he got that name to a wider audience in the 70s and 80s by appearing on some of the biggest shows of the day, including daytime dramas Guiding Light, As the World Turns, and Ryan's Hope, and primetime favorites Love American Style, Chips, Love Sydney, and Cheers. And if you're looking forward to the big-budget movie musical Into the Woods, well, Chip starred in the original Broadway production of the Stephen Sondheim Spectacular, and he was also in the recent revival of the stage show as well. Now, in the mid-1980s, Universal Pictures was in a bind trying to bring the first Marvel Comics feature film to the big screen. They had the look of Howard the Duck, they just didn't have the voice. And some of the biggest names in Hollywood were brought in to test for the role, but they didn't quite... You know I've got to use this bad pun. They didn't quite fit the bill.
Undoubtedly, one of Earth's greatest minds here.
But once producers heard Chip Zion, they just knew they had their Howard. Well, we're continuing our look at the movie that brought the Steve Gerber character Howard the Duck to life. I want to bring in the actor now who gave Howard a voice You've also seen him in many episodes of your favorite television shows, and he's a well-renowned performer on the Broadway stage. A big Comic Book Central welcome to Chip Zion. Chip, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. Okay, so you're a Broadway guy. We've mentioned that. They ever produced Howard the Duck on Broadway, would you consider a return to the role?
Would I be visible, or would I? Absolutely. Would I be dressed up like a duck? Sure.
Would you
why
dress
not?
Like? Why not? What, you're an actor, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I played a frog in a show off Broadway, so where I had a frog helmet on. So I probably could do the duck thing too.
There's frogs in the Howard the Duck comic book. I don't see why we couldn't put that all together. How would Howard the Duck the musical play out on stage? Do you think?
Gee, I don't know. I mean, you know, there's some good rock and roll numbers in the movie, but what would we do? What would we do on stage? I'd have to think about that.
A rock opera, maybe?
A rock opera would be fun.
Kind of like a Flash Gordon thing, you know? Like maybe have, you know, somebody like Queen from back in the day. Somebody now could do the music.
Could we do all the special effects? How do I crash through, from one planet to another?
Just drag you from one side of the stage to the other.
I mean, it might end up being like Spider-Man where I crash into the wall. You know, I might get hurt now that I think about it.
Unintentionally, right? Yeah. Well, they did knock Ed Gale around a lot. We talked about that with him. They really knocked him around a lot.
I missed all that. I know that they did.
You got the easy part of Howard the Duck, I think, right? You came in afterward.
You know, I came in, I mean, my whole thing was really weird. I was actually, I was doing a show in San Diego. I was doing a version of Merrily We Roll Along with Sondheim, with Steve Sondheim and James Lapine, and we were reworking it after it had been on Broadway, and a casting director from Universal Pictures came backstage after a show one night and said that she didn't really didn't think the show worked that well, but she thought I sounded like a duck, and did I have any interest in it? Did I have any interest in auditioning for Howard the Duck? And
Did you even know what that was?
I did not know what it was. I had never read the comic books, okay. And I had no idea what it was. But and so I was kind of my feelings were hurt, to be honest. And,
now were they really? Because I know, like so if somebody comes up to you on the street and just says you sound like a duck, that's kind of an insult. But as an actor and you're on stage and a producer comes up to you and says you sound like a duck, that might mean work. So is there a different perspective, or was it like, no, I don't sound like a duck?
No, I was horrified. I thought, like, what is that? How could she, where does she even get that, you know? And the next day I called my agent and I said, you know, the weirdest thing happened to me. I'm so, you know, I'm depressed. This woman came backstage and she said that she hadn't really cared for the show that much, but thought I sounded like a duck and I should come in and audition for Howard the Duck. And my agent went nuts. My agent, he said, oh, my God, you're kidding me. He said,
nuts in a good way.
No, in a great way.
He knows this is George Lucas.
Yeah, he said, Chip, this is huge. It's George Lucas. Everybody in the world's trying to get this job. It's a big deal. And he said, I'll call her right now. I'm going to call her right now. And you'll go in. You're out. I was in California, in San Diego, and I had to go up to L.A., and I went in and auditioned. And then I became aware of everything that surrounded the whole Howard the Duck thing, and I got very competitive. I mean, I really wanted to do it. The show closed in San Diego. I came back to New York. I auditioned another four or five times, and somewhere along the line, they flew me out to California, to San Francisco, to Lucas, what I call Lucas Land, and I auditioned again out there. And then ultimately, I didn't get it. I mean, what happened? I didn't get it.
That was the same with Ed Gale, he said. He didn't get it either.
Yeah, I was devastated. I mean, by this point, I've flown all over the place trying to get the job, and I really got invested in it, and I really wanted to get it, and I didn't get it. And what happened to me was that I was sitting around on Memorial Day, and my agent called me, and he said, you know, are you sitting down? I said, yeah. He said, you got to be on a plane today. He said, well, ship your clothes. He said, just go to the airport. All right, just go to the airport and get on a plane. They've got a flight all set up for you. You are now the voice of Howard the Duck.
Wow.
And I said, what happened? And he said, well, and I, you know, I never, to be honest, is this true or not? I don't really even know. But what I had been led to believe was that they hired Robin Williams. And after about 3 or 4 days of looping the film, he couldn't stand it. he wanted out.
Okay, now that explains a little bit, because when we talked to Ed Gale, he mentioned that he told us a Robin Williams story about him being on the set.
Oh, well, that's
him. And he was asleep, and he woke up, and he didn't want to be bothered, and it turned out it was Robin Williams. I thought he was just like, thought it was cool, and it was George Lucas, and he showed up. I didn't even get that part. So he was there as Howard.
Yeah, he was. I mean, my understanding was that, you probably know all this, but the voice of the duck was originally done on the set.
Right.
And for one reason or another, that they decided that they wanted to go in a different direction. I wasn't privy to anything else that happened. It was an obligation. What that did was it created an obligation to be able to match to sync up to the voice that they had done on the set. And so that dictated a certain kind of timing. And so you had to actually look at the duck bill, and as it was flapping, you had to make sure that you had to match up to that. It was insanely difficult.
Well, this is all your theater training then coming in too, then, right?
Well, yeah, but the truth is, I've ruined many a performance looping myself on film or television shows. I've like ruined. It's something that can be dreadful, and you can really regret what you did in that little studio, which ends up being different from what you did on the set. But I was never on the set.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's because you always kind of wonder that, because actors are on there and you see all these different things, and then you see them. And it's like, man, how can they just match up? How can they rechannel that almost again?
Yeah.
But you're kind of coming in cold. Well, mention your stage chops, if you will. When you're thinking about, okay, somebody comes up to you when you're on stage, coming off stage, you sound like a duck. Did you even think about that point? Because at that point, you were mostly Broadway at that point, right? And stage acting and a lot of those different things coming up too, right? Wasn't that how you got into the business in the first place? And
well,
as a singer as well?
Yeah, I mean, I was a singer. I was doing musicals on Broadway, but my career, I was just starting to kind of, by that point, I'd been on a television show called Love, Sydney with Tony Randall. I had done some cult musicals that became big hits in New York in the early 80s. And, I was kind of feeling my oats. I was young and cocky, and I was kind of feeling it, you know. And
what were you leaning more towards, singing, acting?
I wanted to be the truth. I think in those days I wanted to be a famous theater actor, and I felt like primarily that would be in musicals. But I also really wanted to, I thought, like, you know, why not? Why can't I be a film star, you know, and do action movies? Except I don't really, if you see what I look like, you might think that's kind of ridiculous, but.
Well, you did tell us you played a frog, so.
But in my head, you know, I always thought of myself as what I would refer to as a closet leading man.
So you're thinking, this is in the 80s, so you're thinking like Bruce Willis kind of thing, or like, what are you seeing?
Well, the truth is, I'd been, I was thinking I could get the parts that, Richard Dreyfuss didn't want to do, that would get sloughed off and given.
Okay.
That's kind of where I was at. And in fact, at one point, I was doing Hotel Baltimore at the Marquee Forum in Los Angeles, and it was a big deal. And Richard Dreyfuss's agent came and sought me out and said, I get a lot of parts for Richard, and I could probably give you some of the things that he chooses to turn down.
Oh, wow, that's a dream come true.
Yeah, it was a dream. And I went up to his office, and this agent, whose name I believe was, I think his name was Meyer Mishkin, was kind of famous, I guess, but his big client was John Wayne.
Nice.
I went to have a meeting with the agent, and I met John Wayne, which I felt at the time was, of course, I should be meeting John Wayne. And John Wayne turned to me and he said, "Hey, kid, what do you do?" And I said, "I'm an actor." He said, "Yeah, well, that's great news, best of luck to you." And so I met John Wayne, and I thought, like, yeah, I could be in, why am I not in John Wayne movies? anyway, that was, I think my goal then was to, was was pretty much to continue to do theater, but somehow end up in Los Angeles, which I never did. And
but you kind of have to have that attitude, though, as an actor, don't you, that you can take on the world? I mean,
yeah.
You can't just be this reserved and hope jobs come in. You got to kind of go after it like that. Because weren't you kind of thinking like maybe the Sinatra route at one point, like nightclub singer, but also actor and kind of all around?
Well, I wanted to sing in saloon. I mean, yeah, I had a whole Sinatra thing. I mean, I still am thinking about that. You know, I still think about that all the time. I mean, part of me I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and, you know, I think my lofty ambition then was to host a game show. I really didn't have any, you know, I came to New York, because I was working at a theater in Chicago that burned down. And, I just got into a car with a bunch of people and we drove to New York and I was lucky enough to get work right away. I ended up being, Snoopy and Charlie Brown, and, you know, so suddenly I was in the Union, I was meeting.
How do you do that, though? How do you go from Chicago? Like, how do you just get in a car and go? Like, do you have money?
You're young. I was right out of college at that point, I would really go to law school, too. I mean, so the acting, I was sort of motoring down two roads.
But you had everything going on.
I mean, I felt like I didn't need that much money to live on. I was all alone, and I'd gone to school out east. So when I got to New York, I knew a million people in New York that I'd gone to college. I went to University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, but a lot of those friends had migrated to New York City. So I had a lot of friends I could, you know, a lot of couches I could stay on. But I got work right away, and not only, you know, so suddenly I was earning money, and there was a rule in Charlie Brown that the girls in the cast had to be under 5'6", which for me ended up being like a massive, I thought it was like a fantastic, like a party for me, or so I didn't know what, I'd
you
never
were a giant.
Seen it. Yeah, I felt like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this in my life, and I loved it, you know, I was having such a great time, So I was very, very lucky, particularly right at the beginning. I got work right away. But yeah, I thought, gee, I can sing. I wanna sing standards like Sinatra and play nightclubs. I wanna host a game show. Then suddenly I was acting in really serious theatrical plays, not musicals, and I had some success early on in that area. And so, yeah, it was all confusing. I mean, it was, I wasn't quite sure what I was doing.
I mean, you had a ton of work, too, because I think your first TV gig was what, Love American Style?
you know, again, just an amazing stroke of good luck. I was on an episode of Love American Style that was like supposed to be a backdoor pilot.
There all were. It was like Happy Days started there, and it was like,
it was
like the failed, like things that didn't make it as pilots, but like, let's test them out on Love American Style.
Yeah, well, we were doing this thing like there were three brothers who were three wacky brothers and with a wacky dad, and we thought we were shooting a pilot, but yeah, I mean, I rode around on the lot at Paramount, and it's the first time I'd ever been in a movie studio, and I was riding on the back of a golf cart drinking a Heineken, and I thought, like, my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I don't even know how I know this show, too, because I was six when it was on, so I don't even know how I was able to watch it, but I am familiar with it.
Well, at some point I rode by, you know, I grew up on, the Ponderosa, like watching,
Bonanza and, yeah.
Bonanza on television, yeah. And it was Bonanza, the Ponderosa was still there at Paramount. This is in the 70s.
That's great.
The set of the of Bonanza was still there.
Well, no wonder you thought you were a movie star.
Yeah, I thought, like, you know, everything's totally cool. I mean, this is, you know.
And then you started getting one TV show after another. I mean, it was just like a string of appearances, right, on a bunch of different – and then you did some soaps and you had some recurring roles on soaps.
Well, I got very – yeah, I mean, I got very – you know, I've come across some performances. I got on Ryan's Hope, which was an early – and, you know, I had hair like Jimi Hendrix at that point, like really big hair, and it's very 70s. And I remember it so well where this was, they still had teleprompters in those days, rolling teleprompters.
Oh, wow.
But I didn't know how to use it, and so like I just came across the clip from Ryan's Hope, which is so funny because
was it with paper or was it electronic?
It was electronic, but it was scroll. Was it paper? It was scrolling.
Because when I started, I mean, I got a TV gig in the early 90s, and it was at a local TV station. We saw the paper. Like, we had to weight it down with a rock, and it was a strip of paper that was trying. So that's why I was wondering if you had that, because if somebody let it go, really, like, the paper slid through.
Well, what was happening, it was scrolling up.
Yeah.
And my head was bobbing because I was trying to follow it, and I panicked because I didn't want to be the person who had to stop, you know, the tape. And
yeah, because they don't stop tape. They just keep going.
Well, no. I would have crashed and burned. I mean, I was in big trouble, and I'll never. This really kind soap actress who'd been on it for years just started feeding me my lines. You know, along the lines of, "I think what you mean to say is this," and she would say my line, and then I would go, "That's absolutely right. How did you know I was thinking that?" And it's actually there's a clip of it I think on YouTube somewhere, and I see myself in just an absolute panic with big hair. Trying to figure out what the hell I'm talking about on Ryan's Hope. But yeah, I did. I got, you know, I was very lucky. I started to fall apart in the late 70s, just before I was in a show called The March of the Falsettos. I hit a dry spot, and I wasn't sure what I was doing. I got really, you know, I didn't work for like a year or something, and I panicked. I went to L.A., nothing happened. I came back to New York. But by this point, I was also involved with my wife, we're still together, and her career was here. So I always ended up coming back to New York.
Yeah, and you've done a ton of stage work too. So you were doing all these different TV appearances, and then all of a sudden, as we mentioned, Howard the Duck comes along. So let's talk a little bit about did you initially meet with George Lucas, or had you met him at any point in the process?
No, the only time I met George Lucas at Industrial Light and Magic. He was there where we were in we called it the cave. I was in a soundstage for like, you know, 6 weeks, just every day going in there looking at, you know, short segments of the film and looping, trying to figure out what it would sound like to, you know, be pushed out of a, you know, what were those ultralight aircrafts and get hit in the stomach. And there's a scene, you know, and I would sit there with Willard Hike, who I loved, and Gloria loved them. I loved them, and I loved spending being with them. But Willard and I were essentially locked into a room, which we called the cave, for like 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And he kept bringing me rice cakes. I remember eating rice cakes and looking at a screen, and I was always hungry. And you know, he kept feeding me, but he wouldn't let me out.
Cage.
You know, can I go outside? No, we've got, you know, we got to get further today.
You're his pet duck.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So when you're kind of going through it, like, how did you find the voice of Howard then? So you're coming in, you hadn't read the comic books. What direction did they give to you in, like, trying to find the voice?
I didn't do anything. The voice that I'm using now was essentially what I was using. I was just a sort of a smart alecky, urban sort of creature, you know, who was frustrated with where he ended up. And I pretty much just I didn't do anything to achieve a voice. I just did my voice in those circumstances.
Well, they told you you sounded like him, so
and frankly, I was concerned about that because I wanted to work at Shakespeare in the Park here in New York at the Delacorte, and you know, I wanted to be Hamlet or something, and I was afraid somebody would yell out in the middle of one of my important Shakespeare soliloquies that, you know, my God, that guy sounds just like Howard the Duck.
Did that ever happen?
It never happened, but it did happen. It happened in a very weird way when I met my son-in-law. We were drinking, and at some point we were having a good time. This was quite a while ago, but all of a sudden he said, "You know," he said, "you sound so familiar to me." And I said, "Why would that be?" He said, "You know, you sound like like how, like this, I love this movie. I used to watch it over and over again, you know, Howard the Duck. And he said, you sound like that guy. And I said, you know, I am that guy. And he almost, you know, like, you know, and he just said, that's not possible. He said,
it sounds like a line that somebody would say, like, you know, like you sound like Howard the Duck, like, oh yeah, that's me. Like, how would you prove it? Right.
Yeah. Well, I said, no, let's look it up. It is me. It was me. But he was shocked. I mean, but it was his generation to a certain extent. It was his generation of, you know, he was exactly the target age for that, for when the film came out.
Oh yeah. And it was, well, and it's, hey, it holds the distinction of being the first Marvel Comics movie.
Yeah,
so you made a little bit of history there in the process.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I had signed. I mean, I had deals with that. I mean, it really was going to change my life. I mean, in fact, when I left, Willard Hike and Gloria put me in this beautiful stretch limo to the airport in San Francisco, and they said, you know, how does it feel? You are Howard the Duck. I remember thinking, it feels pretty good. Feels pretty darn good. And I had signed deals for, like, you know, sequels for like three more movies.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. Had they talked about that with you? I mean, because obviously this was a big budget. You know, you never know what a movie's going to do when it comes out. Had they talked about future movie sequels?
Yeah, I had signed, you know, I had a contract that was, you know, like a phone book.
Wow.
I signed contracts for a ton of money. But for three sequels, and also Howard the Duck was going to be the spokesman for AT&T. And
okay.
I also did a thing where I hosted entertainment. What was on in that year? It was like Entertainment Weekly. One of those entertainment shows. Entertainment Tonight was on the air. And I hosted as Howard. I hosted an evening of Entertainment Tonight, and there were all sorts of tie-ins and also merchandising.
Wow!
And I literally, you know, I left San Francisco when I left, and also just the glorious thing that there was a big party at George Lucas's ranch, which is like was like the state of Montana. I mean, the massiveness of the whole thing was just struck me like this is. Not possible. I've won the lottery. You know. I mean, it's huge. But we know what happened. You know, it didn't work out.
Yeah. Well, but, and the budget was huge at the time, and yeah, I mean, it was a comic book movie. It was George Lucas, so yeah, it had a ton of stuff going for it. These sequels that they talk about, did they ever mention any storylines or any villains?
No.
Anything
no,
they
I don't
wanted
recall.
You to do? Do this different. Do this bigger.
I don't recall anything like that. I only remember that they were, you know, that they were thinking about them and okay. that they were hoping that it would happen, but it didn't.
Had you had a chance to meet any of the other actors or anybody else afterward? Because you're coming in after it's already done.
Yeah. No. Well, I didn't meet Leah Thompson came to the, she was at the where we did the recording. One day, and we shook hands and said hello, and that was the extent of people that I had met that actually worked on the film. I was friendly with Miles Chapin before and after that, and he worked on the film. And I, you know, at one point was responsible for carrying Howard around or something, you know, because it was hard to move if you were in the duck suit. There were different ways. I'm sure you know this. They had like a robot. They had a, you know, what I call the duck bag with somebody inside it. You know. And they had three different ways of making the duck, and one of them, if you were inside the uniform, was very difficult to move, evidently. But I didn't, you know, I wish in hindsight that I could have been on the set, obviously, because I think it would have changed the, you know, I could have had more control over the performance.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you what the toughest part of your job doing this was, so, but I'm guessing that's it, and just not knowing as an actor where you needed to go with it.
Yeah, well, I think it was also, I think that really the hardest part was, because it was fun to see the films, I mean, you know, to see it, and when I auditioned, I saw portions of it, but the hardest part was is that you were tied into the rhythm that had been established on the set, and you had to kind of fit your performance into that. And normally that wouldn't be, you know, normally that wouldn't be the case, because you basically it's somebody else's idiosyncratic delivery, and you're trying to fit into that, and normally it wouldn't work that way.
What was the most interesting part of the job, or the most entertaining part for you in going through it?
You know, for me, the best part of it for me was my relationship with we had so much fun in that cave. So, you know, I was looking at literally at 12-minute segments of the film and spending days. We'd finish one reel, and, you know, a reel was like 12 minutes. And, but the fun of it was, you know, I wandered through Industrial Light and Magic on like a free moment, just seeing, like, I learned about Greeblies and little strange things that they could do to make it look like electrical circuits on the floor were, you know, in all those sci-fi movies that came out in that era, there was always like flashing blue lights that ran along floorboards, along electrical lines. And, you know, it was like fantastical things that they could do on computers then. Early, you know, it seems like a long time ago, but they were at the forefront of that. And so just hanging out and watching the capability that they had technically was just incredible. I mean, I just loved it. And also, for me, I loved being in San Francisco. I loved going home every night and driving over some beautiful bridge. And it was a very heady, exciting experience, and it all sort of came to a crashing halt when the film opened, and it didn't really do as well as everybody hoped that it would do.
Yeah, and the thing is, I always say this, you know, when we're talking about it, is the money's definitely up there. I mean, the money is definitely on the screen. They put a lot of it into it. As you're going through, any favorite scene? You've probably seen the movie a bunch of times since then. Any favorite scenes or anything that you like about your performance, or some of the lines that you got to deliver when you see it and you go, oh, that you know, like maybe that cracked me up a little bit.
You know, honestly, when I see it now, I'm kind of I've seen little clips of it from time to time, and I'm really surprised by it. I was surprised that it sort of towards the end of the movie, I'm like singing with the band. I'm like up, you know, and I'm like singing that song, Howard the Duck, you know, and that amuses me. And, you know, there's the whole scene that some people were really troubled by, but, you know, where Howard gets involved with Leah in her apartment, and, you know, they start, you know, a lot of people were really troubled by the cross-species romance.
We talked about that with Ed, yeah. He said, look, it's just not, that's not what Howard was intending. That, you know, that was, and it was, and she called his bluff. It was like they both knew nothing, you know. It's definitely an interesting scene.
Yeah. Well,
how do you play that as an actor when you see, like, when you first saw that? What's your reaction?
You know, honestly, I didn't think it was all that weird. I thought, like, it was kind of sweet. It was like I didn't think of it as being that strange. I know that's probably completely crazy. Like, people are going, "What's wrong with him? He missed. You know, what was he thinking?" But I thought of myself as being fully capable of being Howard the Duck, and I started to stop thinking of Howard as a duck. You know, I just didn't. It just eventually didn't really think of him as being a duck. I just thought of him as a person who looked very similar to a duck.
Well, I think that's the key, because Howard obviously doesn't think of himself.
Yeah,
I mean, he knows he's
a
duck, but he doesn't think he's like an alien. I mean, that's who he is. So it's
right.
Not
I mean,
like he's...
he ends up being, you know, just a stranger in a strange land. I mean, I remember, like, there's a scene where Howard's like coming out of he's around a fountain, and there's school kids are coming around, and he's annoyed with them, and you know, I always like that, where he was like, he's, you know, trying to scare the kids, and I liked all those ultralight scenes, which I mentioned earlier, because we really spent so much time trying to figure out the sounds that, you know, I would literally hit myself in the stomach in the soundstage where we were recording to figure out, like, what would you do if somebody's, like, you know, pounding on you? Or,
well, that's,
you know,
why I love talking to voice actors when they're talking about these things, because you're the character, Howard, is going through so much on the screen, and you're in a little teeny room.
Yeah, and it's exhausting, because you look like people are looking at you.
Are they doing things to you? Like, are people hitting you and knocking you around a little bit? Or is a director coming up and hitting you with a pillow or something?
No, he stayed pretty much in the control room there. But But the truth is that, like, I was bouncing all over the place, or, like, hitting myself or slamming into the wall or trying to get myself out of breath and running around. You know, if people actually recorded that, you would basically look and think, oh, there's a guy who's lost his mind. I mean, that's a crazy person. But you are trying to recreate sort of the physical life of the character so that you can, so you sound like you're doing it.
Yeah. Oh,
and you know, and Howard was in pretty bizarre circumstances.
Yes.
You know, I mean, let you know.
Oh, he's tossed around the whole movie. We talked about that with Adam. Like,
from beginning to end,
he's like thrown against everything.
Yeah, he's thrown all over the place. I mean, I'd never met Ed. I'd love to meet him and chat with him about what he really went through it.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm only hoping that I was able to you know do something that matched up with his hard work. I worried about that a lot.
Well, we're left with a pretty cool film. I know it didn't do well at the box office, but you know what? I think people have picked up on it over the years, and it's certainly done well in home video. And I have to ask you, have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy?
I haven't.
You have not seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
No,
has anyone told you about Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes, I've heard, but I should see it, shouldn't I?
Do you know the very final scene of Guardians of the Galaxy?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. Well, that's
is this a spoiler?
Well, look, anybody listening to this podcast has seen Guardians of the Galaxy, but if they haven't, they're totally listening to the wrong podcast. The final scene is Howard the Duck.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it all over the internet.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, he's
know,
sitting
Howard
there. Yeah, he's a CGI character, but obviously you're not voicing it. You know, it's Seth Green.
Right.
You know, I guess maybe Seth has the inside track on it, but is there a way that the chip might try to do, you know, do you have anybody at Disney on speed dial? Is that something you'd be interested in? If they did a Howard the Duck CGI kind of, you know, character in a Marvel movie, is that something you'd be interested in tackling again?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, if people still, you know, the sound of my voice is, I'm older now, you know, consider, I mean, how many years ago was that? It's like, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
We're coming up on the 30th anniversary, yep.
Yeah, yeah, and so like you know, your octave changes, but
well, as we can tell from the beginning of this show, you can still channel it when you need to. So
that's great, thank you. But I mean, you know, I'd love to, but you know, I don't know that opportunity is out there for me. But of course, I would. Sure.
Well, we'd love to hear you in a Marvel movie. That'd be or even see you in a Marvel movie. That'd be pretty cool. But something you are working on now, you're back on the stage again. Is Into the Woods still going on, or has that wrapped?
You know, the film is coming out Christmas Day.
The film's coming out.
It's coming out. There's been so much Into the Woods stuff that's out there in the ether, and I've seen the film. It's just excellent. I mean, it's really good.
Okay. You reunited a few years ago, though, right? For our listeners.
I did it again. Well, I was old enough to play my father, so I did it again. It's the Delacorte. You know, I played, you know, that's how old I am, you know. And but it was fun because basically the cast that were all trapped. They could listen to my stories over and over again, and they couldn't get away from me. But
you started the role right after Howard the Duck, right? This was in '87.
Exactly.
You started
right
on
after.
Broadway.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I was also just out in we did this amazing concert in Costa Mesa just a couple weeks ago, where the original company of Howard the Duck. I mean, Into the Woods.
Oh, hey, look, don't get yeah, if that happened,
that would
I'd be
fun,
thrilled.
Right? But the original cast of Into the Woods got together in Costa Mesa with Steve Sondheim and James Lapine. And it was like in Mo Rocca was the host. And we did selections from the show and then chatted about it. It was like a symposium with performances. And it was, you know, it was amazing. There were 3,000 people for two shows, you know, it sold out, like 6,000 people saw it, and it was like a rock concert for, you know, if you're into musical theater, you know, it was amazing. But
did you expect that, though, when they announce these things and these reunions about these things, do you expect those kind of crowds, or you just come out and go, whoa?
No, I was shocked by the Into the Woods concert that we just did, but I think all of us that were involved, even the creators, we're all basically saying, like, my God, the huge life that the show's had since we did it so many years ago is just fantastic. I mean, it's great, but it's like, you know, who knew?
Yeah.
And the movie's will be very successful, and you know, I'm going to the premiere, and it's that's a whole exciting chapter. So, you know, I'm proud to have been a part of that. But, yeah, you know, the eights, that was an interesting decade for me. I mean, it's true. I went right from Howard the Duck into the Woods, basically.
How easy is that for you to slip back into, not the same character, but you mentioned it was the character's father, but that production again, how all those years later, how easy was that, or was it easy?
Yeah, you know what, it was unbelievable. It's so weird what your body retains, you know. I mean, we did songs, you know, with the kids who were in Into the Woods 27 years ago are now older than I was when we did the show. And Ben Wright was played Jack and the Beanstalk, and he jumped on stage. He's, you know, in his 40s now. He was 18 then. And he sang better than ever. I mean, he, you know, it was so much fun. We did really complicated songs, and we even found ourselves doing the, you know, basically the blocking and staging that we had done 27 years ago that we somehow remember. And it was fantastic. I mean, and they were amazing. The kids, that was the shock of it, was how good the kids were who are no longer kids. They have four kids of their own. Danny Furland, who is Little Red Riding Hood, has got two boys. And you know, they're grown-ups, and it was an amazing event, but it was fun to go back and revisit it.
Well, they had great talents to look up to bring them along there, too. Yeah. How can fans find out more about you now, or where are you still performing at 54 Below?
You know what, I'm actually going to be at 54 Below, and not my own show, but in a different show in January on the 16th and 17th. And then I'm going to be in a new Broadway show called It Should Have Been You, directed by David Hyde Pierce and starring Tyne Daly and a lot of really good people.
Great cast.
Which opens in, starts previewing in March and opens in April.
Oh, fantastic. How can fans find out more about this? Are you on social network anywhere, Twitter, Facebook,
yeah,
website?
You know what, I am on Twitter. I've been secretive about it to a certain extent, but yeah, I don't have my, you know, I was trying to come up with my own website, but I've never done it. I don't know. I think you know, as I say to people a lot, when I say just Google me. You'll see everything's there. It's all there. Just Google me.
Your whole life.
My whole life is there. It's like, and it's all over YouTube. There's things that I don't even want there, but they're there.
Can they follow you on Twitter, or are you stealth?
You know what? I'm Chipact on Twitter, Chipact.
Okay, so if they want to find out more about these performances, how they can get a hold of you, I mean, do you even think about doing comic book conventions or anything like that, or, you know?
You know, I never have. I just, it's a whole world that I've just never even considered, but of course I would, and you know, I don't know. There's things going on out there that I just never was aware of. I've been in my little bubble here in New York, and I do, you know, what I do. But those things would be great. But you know who Mo Rock is from CBS Morning?
Yeah, I actually met him in Metropolis, Illinois. He was doing a thing for the Tonight Show one time.
I mean, he's fabulous, but he was saying the same thing to me. He said, "Chip, what is your presence on social media? Get going here. You know, there's not that much time left. Get going." And the other night, he was screening of Into the Woods, and I was sitting next to him, and we took a selfie and posted it on his Twitter account.
Yeah.
And the funny part of that was he noticed later that we were being photobombed by Steve Sondheim, who was sitting behind.
So, did you ever think you would ever find yourself saying the word selfie and Steve Sondheim?
It's Steve Sondheim in the same sentence. I'm actually very pretty tech savvy because. You know, I'm like the original audio visual club, you know, president, and, you know, from high school.
Pocket protector.
Yeah, exactly. I was that guy. You know, get Chip. We got a 16 millimeter film. We got to thread the projector. Let's get Chip. That's who I was. So I love ever since, you know, I mean, well, it's obviously, you know, years later, but I'm pretty tech savvy, but my social media presence has been, I just thought like I shouldn't do it, but now I'm thinking I probably should.
Well, get that beefed up. We'd love to see that. Yeah. And we'd love to see it at a comic convention with Ed Gale. How great would that be? To see both Howard the Ducks together?
That would be really fun. And I'd love to. We've never met. I'd love to meet him.
Oh, that'd be fun. Well, yeah. Hey, who knows? Maybe, you know, making things happen here on Comic Book Central. You never know. Yeah. So we'll see what we can do. A buddy of mine runs a convention up in Connecticut. Hey, that'd be very cool to see you guys both there. Hey, Chip, as I mentioned to Ed last week, you guys were both a big part of Marvel Comics' first feature film. It seems to be, as I mentioned, gathering more appreciation over the years. I know I'm enjoying it more each time I watch it. So on behalf of my listeners, I thank you for giving that sarcastic quack to our favorite fowl, and I thank you for joining me here on Comic Book Central today.
Thank you so much, Joe. I've enjoyed it.
Between Ed Gale telling us about meeting Robin Williams on the set of Howard the Duck, and now Chip mentioning that Robin was one of the actors initially brought in to voice Howard, we really got some amazing insight into the late great comedian's brief time in the Marvel Universe. In fact, those two stories got me Googling this past week, and I found a little gold nugget on the net. It's a clip from a 1986 interview with Robin, where the interviewer asked him about Howard the Duck.
God, I tried the voice for them. They wanted different voices. When I talked to George Lucas, who was a friend, he wanted me to try it just to give them an idea about different voices. I tried different voices. I tried real tough duck. They want a sensitive kind of 1980s yuppie duck.
Vincent Price.
A duck like this. Oh, God. Vincent Price duck. A Nicholson duck. All right, listen. You really make... Hey, quack off. I'm really bad. I don't know. I give great beak. I'm telling you, honey, I give great beak.
Now, I have to say, I liked Robin much better as the genie in Aladdin. And I'm glad we got Chip as Howard. Chip's got just the right amount of sass and sarcasm for the part. It'd be very cool if he could revisit the character in the current Marvel Universe, but if it doesn't work out, we certainly got him in the first Marvel feature film. Again, my thanks to Chip Zion for joining me this week, and Ed Gale for kicking things off last week. Be sure to follow Chip on Twitter, at ChipAct, that's C-H-I-P-A-C-T, for updates on his latest projects. A programming reminder, folks, if you enjoyed episode 53 of Comic Book Central, that was my interview with writer-producer Mark Evanier, be sure to check out the next episode of the IndieCast, as I continue that conversation with Mark, and we talk about his time in the world of Indiana Jones.
Tune in each fortnight to the IndieCast, the world's number one Indiana Jones fan podcast.
Trust me.
Featuring the latest news, reviews, and interviews with on-screen and behind-the-scenes talent who helped bring to life the greatest adventure movie series ever made. Each episode has the latest from the world of Indiana Jones, as well as interactive segments, trivia, contests, and specials, including radio dramas and music retrospectives. The IndieCast.
It's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God.
Available in iTunes or listen directly at theindiecast.com.
If adventure has a name, it must be the IndieCast.
It's IndieCast episode 202, which is going to be on iTunes shortly, as well as theindiecast.com. And be sure to check out each and every episode of Comic Book Central on our website, comicbookcentral.net. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the show in iTunes. Had a bunch of new subscribers recently. Welcome to the show. Thanks for downloading. Would love to see some more reviews and ratings posted in iTunes. So if you like what you're hearing, take a minute. Post a review on iTunes. I really appreciate it. Don't forget to share the lair and follow Comic Book Central on Twitter at ComicBookCTRL. Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/ComicBookCentralNetwork. Or drop me a line. Let me know what you think of Howard the Duck. Let me know what you think of any movie, any comic book movie. It's joe@comicbookcentral.net. You can also click the Signal Me tab on the website. Well, folks, time for me to waddle on out of here, but fear not, I shall return in one short week with some great audio from a very cool show. Next week on Comic Book Central. Once again, I'm taking the show on the road, this time to my favorite city, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's my trip to the Steel City Con, where I go trekking with Lieutenant Commanders Jadzia Dax and Worf, Terry Farrell, and Michael Dorn. You will hear those interviews next week. Until then, go watch Howard the Duck. Have a fantastic week. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Unported License. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Not bad for a duck from outer space.
You were great, Ducky.